Greetings, travelers.
Greetings for the mythical march.
Oh, yes. Yes, I love it. And this isn't just any day in Mythical March.
No, no.
This is someone's very special day.
It is. It is.
It is Ostara. No. So it's Aster's day. Oh, wait, no.
It is that. It is that, but that's not the specialness of today.
Oh, then why do I have this day circled with a red pen?
Because it is the day that your most gracious epic friend was brought forth into existence in this realm.
Bruce Campbell?
God damn it. No, it's my birthday, Mark. What the hell?
That's right. That's right. Oh this my gosh. Hi. Happy birthday.
Fucking Bruce Campbell. What the hell, man? What
should the
hell?
Should I do the old Hellview Cemetery birthday dirge for you?
A birthday gird? What the hell
dirge.
Is that?
Yeah, it was a birthday dirge. It was like, happy birthday. Happy birthday. People dying everywhere. You're alive and it's not fair. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. May the candles on your cake burn like cities in your wake. Happy birthday. It was a birthday dirge. I remember we used to sing it at Hellview. So.
There's some irony here, but I will say that you kind of sound like when I had to do a birthday song when I worked at Bennigan's, and I remember it, and I really wish something else in my mind would replace the happy, happy birthday on this your special day. Like, it's there, yes. Right?
Well, that's because, what was it, the birthday song was copyrighted for so long, and everybody had to make up their own versions so that they wouldn't get sued or had to pay $2 to whoever the hell that guy was who wrote it. I don't remember. It was a complicated thing. But anyway, it's Ostara, so we should celebrate your birthday the Ostara way, right? So we should plant a vegetable garden or a flower garden and then spring clean your house, host a tea party with a springtime theme with hot tea. And then
I just want to know if you're going to clean my house, Mark. Like, was that on the table? Because,
well, I am all about the egg-based dishes, right? So you could have a custard pie, a frittata, you know, egg salad, something like that. I'm good with that. So, and you know, that's why we have, you know, Easter and all that. So, unlike some other holidays that might be also around this time, but we've also got St. Patty's Day coming up.
St. Patty's Day has passed as of today.
Is it?
My birthday's on the 19th. You are the worst friend in the world.
I don't have good calendar skills. So that's all it is.
Now you're blaming the calendar. First it was Bruce Campbell. You know what? Can we just get on with this episode? I am not feeling the birthday love. I am not going to plant anything because it'll immediately die, but I will go have some eggs for breakfast. I'm not inviting you because of your present behavior. And moving on, what are we talking about today?
All right. Well, because of St. Patty's Day, I was reminded that we did not do anything about the little people of the day, right? Because that is a common thing that occurs with St. Patty's Day, especially over in the Irish culture, the Gaelic culture, stuff like that. So I had to bring up a couple things that were back in the day from early Erie, Florida. It was actually one of the things that first put me on the map as a paranormal person who had found some stories that people had forgotten about, right? We were on the publishing track for the first book, and I was making the rounds doing, you know, hey, promoting the first book, trying to get pre-orders in. And I got on Coast to Coast AM, which was a radio show I listened to every day as a child growing up. For those that don't know, that's on late at night on the radio on your AM dial. And it used to be Art Bell. And then it became George Norrie. And now it's George Norrie and other hosts. And they would basically do like us. They'd talk about all the weird things and have callers call in. And basically, if you said it on that show, they were 100% in your corner. Right. Very rarely did they debunk anything and all that. And so as a child, that was like, oh my gosh, they're talking UFOs. They're talking all the things. And I fell in love with it. But it was my time to shine on this show. Finally, I was being invited as a guest author. So I brought up as many stories from Erie, Florida as I could. And the one that got the most notice was a story about Bock Tower. Now, before we talk about that story in Bock Tower, we've got to go back in the Wayback Machine. Are we good with that?
I am totally 1000% good with going back in the Wayback Machine.
Okay, well, the first thing we got to do is go back to the Wayback Machine because we got to talk about the area that this story takes place. Now, Bock Tower is this tower in the middle of Central Florida, right? It's in an area they call Iron Mountain in Florida, and that's because it is a whopping 223 feet above sea level, right? Which is
wow. Well, yeah. For Florida, that's pretty intense, my friend.
I mean, Space Mountain is bigger than that, but you know, for those of us up here in the Smokies, that's not even a speed bump.
No, it's not. That is not even the height of my driveway.
Right? Exactly. And that ain't, she ain't kidding there, gang. But basically, some say this hill, the reason it stands out in the peninsula, used to be people would say this is the highest point in Florida. No, it's the highest point in the Florida Peninsula. There's some points up in the panhandle that are much higher. This, they say, the reason it has this weird area around it, right? It's got unusual properties compared to the rest of Florida and all that. That's why it rises up. Some people theorize that it was a meteorite that plowed into the earth, and that's why it made the, you know, the point there. But that would be way, way back, you know, ancient prehistory and all that. That's why it doesn't look like a crater or stuff like that. But there's this legend of the hill, right, that mm-hmm. is right next to it. And that is an area not really tied into our story, but I've got to talk about it a little bit because it's right there. And that is Spook Hill.
Okay,
have you been to Spook Hill? Okay.
No.
All right, so we'll do a little divergent track here, but it's a mile away from our other story, so I have to talk about it. The legend goes that there was a native chief whose name I would murder if I tried to pronounce it. He was a Cherokee chief, and he was also one of the first Seminole tribes because they'd been all pushed down here. And he settled in a lake near Iron Mountain in the area, which is now Lake Wales. And
okay. The
land was very bountiful, people prospering for many, many years. But then there was a great alligator that started raiding the village under the chief's protection. And the beast was said to be as long as some of the oaks that dotted the shoreline. That's how big this alligator was. And the chief knew that this was no gator, but some evil spirit that was, you know, plaguing his people. He knew to only kill the animals for food, but this was a great beast and had to be destroyed for the survival of his tribe. So he and the beast have this great battle on the lake shore, and the shaman puts a spell on him, you know, direct protection of the great spirit so that he can fight the creature one-on-one. And the chief calls upon the forces of nature himself to defeat the beast, which is 30 feet long.
Wait, this is supposedly a 30-foot alligator?
Yes. A giant kaiju alligator, basically.
Kaiju alligator?
Yeah, it's getting bigger as he's fighting it. So he's having to call on the forces of nature to fight it.
Godzilla! Okay, continue.
It's not the one at Devil's Millhopper, but it's along those lines, right? That's up in Gainesville. We'll talk about that story another time. This one, as they lock into like a death grip with each other, right? It's doing the death roll. He's got it in like a headlock type thing. He's stabbing it with an obsidian blade, which not common in Florida. He had been gifted it from another tribe.
Not common, period. People don't just walk around with obsidian blades.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's old times. It could be like, you know, how many people wear digital watches now? But back in the one time, they were everywhere.
I actually have a friend that wears one of those digital calculator watches all the time.
Wow. So they live in the Wayback Machine then. Okay. So,
yes. But
anyway, they both wrestle into the water. And as they come up, the chief breaches the surface. He has killed the beast, right?
Okay.
And there was a smaller lake that had been created by their fight because they had splashed so much water and all this. And the big lake dries up and like sinks into the death of the creature, right?
Okay.
And so the smaller lake is now Lake Tekoa, and it is still sitting there, and it is right next to this hill called Spook Hill. Now, Spook Hill is called this because it was basically, the tale was lost, right? Because the Indians moved on, the pioneers pushed them out and all that. But what happened is those pioneers noticed something strange about the hill. You go down this little small hill, and then there's this big hill going up. But what would happen is they'd come down the big hill, and then they'd start to go up the small hill, but the horses would get very, very tired going up the small hill. What? It should be the other way around. They should have been, donkeys pulling wagons would, just have really significant struggles doing this. So the legend of the great battle starts coming back, and they're saying, oh, it's the alligator pulling you into the lake. The spirit, it's draining that water. It's pulling your life force and all this. So what happens is this is 1920s rolls around, and this one man parks his car at the base of the hill to go fishing in the little lake. And he noticed his car starts rolling uphill with the force of gravity, like reversed, right? So that's where it begins. And this is in the shadow of Bock Tower. This is in the shadow of Iron Mountain, which is already a crazy place. So they started actually putting signs up around this hill because it became a tourist attraction.
Okay.
You can actually go there and you go to the base of the little hill. At you go down between the little hill up to the big hill, and you put your car in neutral, and your car will roll backwards uphill up the little hill. It's an unusual thing. Now, the town itself embraces this because the town in Florida loves the weird. So they
Florida in general loves the weird. Yeah.
They call it Spook Hill. They name this local school Spook Hill Elementary. Their mascot is Casper the Friendly Ghost. People pull up to it all day, all night, go down there. What's cool is you'll see kids from the school's sports team training by running up and down the big hill and the little hill because it's just so much effort to run up and down the hills. But in truth, if you get a level out, it's an optical illusion. It's just what's down is up and what's up is down. It's easy to debunk, but it's still pretty fun. I think it's interesting when you go there because when you go there and you put your car in neutral and you start kind of backing up that hill, it's weird. But if you look over at the elementary school, it looks like kids are chasing balls uphill and stuff like that.
That is so bizarre.
It's a weird place, right? So that's just in the area.
Okay.
That was what I was going to write about in my book, right? And now when I was running Hellview Cemetery, we used to get stories. People would send us in local legends and stuff to put into the haunted house, right? That was what I had a little mailbox on our GeoCities website, and it was an email from AOL, and people would send me letters about weird things that happened all over Florida, and they wanted to know if we'd put it in the haunt. And I got this wonderful lady, and this is in the shadow of Bock Tower. So Bock Tower, again, back in the Wayback Machine, we're going to go back to 1863 now. And this is a guy named Edward Bock, and he had come from the Netherlands, and he founded a bunch of railroads and some other things like that. He was also the publisher of Ladies' Home Journal. He helped create the phrase living room to change the word parlor so that people could actually move back into that part of the house instead of being the place where you put the dead bodies when somebody died in the family. To show them off. So this guy becomes a big name, right? And he was from Pennsylvania, but he made a winter home down in Lake Wales, and he actually bought all the land around Iron Mountain. And because he just loved the sunsets there. He loved the Florida sunsets. And so that's where he creates Bock Tower, this beautiful bell tower and these beautiful gardens all around it. And he started planting subtropical plants. He built a reflecting pool, which brought in all kinds of wildlife. It currently the home of over 126 species of migratory birds there every year.
Wow.
So it's beautiful, right? And the,
so that, wait, what is it when somebody likes watching birds? What is that called again?
An ornithologist, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So this just happens to be potentially a good travel destination for ornithologists, right?
Oh, yeah. And any, you know, fan of beauty. It's also, you like some beautiful gardens and all that. It's one of those amazing places to visit. And you got Spook Hill a mile away, so you can have some fun there. Okay. So he built it. The tower's made out of marble and coquina. So it's beautiful. They play all kinds of songs now there with the bells. They had a lot of fun during the Game of Thrones time. They would play the Game of Thrones theme and stuff like that on it because it's very medieval looking and all that. So we're going to go forward in the Wayback Machine to 1955. And this is the letter I got in the 1990s telling me about this incident. And the lady who sent it to me, her name was Edwina Rankin. And she was a young girl.
I love that name.
Right. Right. And she was a sweet old lady when I talked to her. She lived in an orange grove in Lake Wales behind Bock Tower. Basically, you go into the main range of Bock Tower. She could see Bock Tower from her family's orange grove and well within the sight of the Singing Tower. And she recalled hearing the bells ringing out hymns and other, you know, beautiful tunes. And she would help her aunt and her uncle and the laborers that worked the orange trees back when harvest time began, right?
Yeah.
So this year stands out with her because the family noticed an unusually large number of oranges disappearing from the trees.
Oh, wow.
So they assumed rats, other pests, stuff like that, right?
Well, fun story for those that are not familiar with Florida. Fruit rats are a ridiculous problem down there.
Yep, yep. They are crazy, crazy scary. Now, the other fear was it could have been traveling Romani, or they were worried about gypsies. They were worried about other people stealing their fruit. Now, she was only like 7 at the time, so she didn't really pay much attention to it.
Okay.
Her aunt hires an exterminator, and he goes out and puts out traps to see if there were that many fruit rats, because the fruit rats are huge, right? Everything in Florida is much bigger. I mean, it may not be a 30-foot gator, but the fruit rats would definitely give that gator a run for its money. So what they caught was something nobody would ever expect. Now, she says what they caught was a small, naked man, no larger than a foot tall. And he was screaming in a foreign tongue and covered in short hair. They knew he was not a baby because he had a full face of hair. And the aunt told Edwina that it must have been a Lilliputian from Gulliver's Travels, right? Or possibly they'd caught a circus performer that was traveling down.
How big did they say this small little person was?
Smaller than a foot tall. So smaller than a water bottle.
Wow.
Now, they had heard of Ripley's Believe It or Not over in St. Augustine. They knew about Ringling. They knew Tom Thumb. You know, he'd been famous for some time, but they couldn't understand a word the guy said. So they basically let him go. Later on, I heard from someone else that they had actually called the police, and the police came out and said, hey, this guy can't possibly be the one who stole your fruit, because look how big he is. He's not stealing all your oranges. Let him go. And well, because they couldn't understand him, they let him go anyway. He'd also been hurt by the fruit trap or the rat trap or whatever it got him. So I
would like us all to put ourselves in these people's shoes for a moment, shall we? Shall we? Yep. Just for a moment, think about if we found a less than 1 foot tall naked man.
Yeah. Stuck in a rat trap in your orange grove.
In our orange grove and saying things that you couldn't understand. I just want to point out that this sounds like a really cheesy movie Bruce Campbell would be in.
Exactly, right? Yeah, and this is an email, basically, I got. And when I called her years later, I was getting the full story. But at this point, this is the beginning of our story, right?
Yeah.
It's about to get weird. As if we weren't.
As if a naked, less than 1 foot guy being caught in a rat trap is not weird. That's weird, Mark. That's okay. In the weird category.
Okay, so more crops go missing over the next few days. Over the next couple weeks, she said. And it certainly was not the little guy. It couldn't be, right? And so they put more traps out, hoping to find more things. And they caught him again.
The same one or a small guy?
It was a small guy. They said it was the same guy. So this time they do call, she remembers them calling the police. And the police coming out and not knowing what to do with the guy. They don't have handcuffs small enough for him. But this time they actually caught him with an orange.
Not an orange.
Yeah. He's obviously still an orange. So the police take him in an orange crate and take him into Lake Wales Police Department. Take him in. So
I assume the handcuffs would not fit such a small, tiny person. And they didn't have zip ties back then.
No. So, all right. So the next night, right? Or that right. night. That
yeah.
Night, sorry. This is when it all hell breaks loose, right? There are the house is attacked with rocks and sticks, and oranges are being thrown at the house from all around. It's like the orange grove has come alive with this. And she swears that when she looked out, she could see dozens of the little men running around through the baseline of the trees, throwing stuff at the house.
Oh, what? How many?
Dozens.
Wow.
Dozens. So they call the police again, and the police come back out. And what they did was the police let the guy in the orange crate go there because they haven't been able to figure out what he's saying, been able to figure out what's going on. And they let him go. And then they all just flee back into the woods. And the police like, sorry, we can't help you. It's your problem. And the family is at a loss. What do we do?
So I know you're going to break here in like 2 seconds. I feel it. I feel the break trembling.
The break
but
is coming.
I just want to point out, I want to give credit to some of the officers of the law in our stories because they get called out because somebody's stealing oranges, which, by the way, it's not great, but it's not like a felony to steal a couple oranges, or in this case, an orange, as that is the only, maybe that little person could have carried two, but we're not talking like that person didn't have a crate or is it a bushel of oranges? I don't know.
I would assume, yeah. I don't know.
But a gaggle of oranges, whatever. But then the police get called and there's this little naked man that I'm sure is nothing and they can't even get a word in edgewise, yeah. Right?
Just
so they put him in the crate.
In a strange tongue, right?
Put in an apple crate.
Orange crate, sorry.
Which, I mean, there's lots of holes, but you're put in a crate like you're a cat or something that was caught. And then you're taken down to the police station for what I'm assuming is not any sort of degree of normal processing. Because if they're this small, most jail cells, they could just walk out of. So I'm quite sure they probably had to keep them either in a crate or in a room for some time.
Yep.
Then,
and trying to get a translator that, in the middle of Central Florida in the 1950s, it's not like you could just pick up the phone and, and go to the internet, and find out who, a translation service or something. So, this is when, I pretty much ended the story here when we talked about it, but we're going to take a break and I'm going to tell you the rest of the story when we return.
Oh my God. I can't wait. Let's hear from our sponsors.
Greetings, travelers. Now available on Audible and other audiobook platforms, Eerie Appalachia. Join us, won't you, as we discuss creatures like the Popelik Monster, the White Fangs, the Snallygaster, the Wampus Cat, the Lizard Man of Skateboard Swamp, Bunnyman Bridge, and the Ohio Grassman. All these creatures and more await you if you dare listen to Erie Appalachia, presented by Mark Muncy, History Press, and Four Horsemen Publishing.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Erie Travels producer Beau Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/Beau_Lake.
We're back.
We're weirded out. I'm not going into Orange Groves now. I'm just, I've seen Gulliver's Travels. I know how it'll end.
You know how this ends, right? No, it's a little different. So the family is trying to figure out what to do, right? They're still losing fruit. And now they kind of know what the problem is, right? They're pretty sure it's this tribe that's living out on their property. Now, according to Edwina, now this was long after I had her letter, I started putting it into the haunted house. I always put a yard gnome in our haunted house. It was just a joke in honor of this story. And people would go, what's the gnome for? I was like, hopefully somebody figures it out, because we would put everything in Hellview was always based on a local legend. I kept hoping somebody would ask, figure out the gnome and maybe knew something about it. I had forgotten about it, right? I'd done nothing with it. And then we start writing the Erie, Florida book years after Hellview's closed. And I'm going back through stories and I'm like, oh, I want to write this one because it's such a fun story. But all I have is this one lady's word on what happened, right? And all I got is this old email sitting in an old email box. So I finally, wrote her again, and she still had the same old email. Of course she did.
There are some people that still have their AOL email. Call,
and that was when I got to call her and talk to her. And sadly, she is no longer with us now, but back then I was able to talk to her, and she had this wonderful rest of the story, right?
Okay.
So unsure what to do at this point, right? They've got a problem on their property. One of the Irish farmhands said, oh, they are red hats.
They're
And we've offended them by taking away... they should have the fruit. They should be gifted the fruit. They feel it's theirs because it's on their land, obviously. So the only way to get rid of them was to get a sacred stone sent from Ireland that would have been blessed by some Irish priest. And this would give them something to know that this land, we understand it's sacred, but this is also our land. Please don't steal fruit from it.
Again, what you said before, like we made the joke about not being able to find a translator, but this isn't like you can Google this, find somebody to do it, and then do it.
Yep. So the Irish farmhand wrote to his own family.
Okay.
Back in Ireland, and managed to arrange the transfer. And apparently they got a rock shipped to them on a boat and brought to the land, and it was placed in the field for this sacred stone. Edwina says she wasn't allowed to watch the ceremony where they put it in. But once they put it in, they never had any more fruit stolen.
Wow.
And she lived nearby Lake Wales and would go visit the farm often still. The owners of the farm now are a large orange conglomerate. And I'm not supposed to say the name of the company that owns that field, but it rhymes with Schmapicana. So it could be any of them, but it's one of the orange conglomerates, right?
Well, I'm at a loss. I have no idea who that could possibly be.
Yeah, it could be anyone. So now what's cool is if you drive to Bock Tower,
right? Yes.
Go past Bock Tower and just keep going from Spook Hill. do Spook Hill first, then go to Bok Tower. Enjoy your time at Bok Tower. But then when you come out, instead of going back out to the right, go left and go around the big roads that go behind Bok Tower. And then it's like you're in your own Wayback Machine, right? Because you're driving through the old roads of Florida. And then you turn down this roads through these orange groves. Off to the left, you'll see a field that is nothing but orange trees and dirt roads. And that dirt road is the road in, you know, that goes in between the things. Now, the road is safe to travel on, but do not go into the private property of the orange grove. We were given permission by the current owners to go look.
Tropicana?
Yeah, to go look for the rock.
Okay. Because we
wanted a picture of the rock to corroborate the story, right?
Did you find the rock?
Well, we follow the roads, and we're following the little directions Edwina gave us from 50 years prior, and we're following the roads, and we're doing all this, and suddenly there's this big clearing, and I'm like, oh, crap, this is it. This is where it has to be, right? This is according to what she had given us, and we see all these boxes all over the place. It's where they keep their bees.
Oh.
So we didn't get out and didn't take any pictures because we did not want to be stung. But now that I know bees are not as dangerous as I thought at the time, but I still was, I'd rather not. But so when we got done, we were like, okay, kind of stinks. We're not going to be able to verify this story, right? So I'm not still going to be able to use it. But thankfully, over time, this wonderful thing called Facebook had appeared. And I reached out on a group, you know, you grew up in Lake Wales when, right?
Yeah.
And I put word out there, does anybody remember somebody being arrested that may have been a diminutive person in the 1940s or 50s?
Okay.
And because Edwina really couldn't remember the exact year that this had happened. And that's when I got a hit from a civilian worker at the police department
who remembered
the guy coming in the orange crate. And now she said he was about a foot and a half tall, almost 2 feet tall, and had very dark complexion, remembered the beard, remembered him being naked, and remembered him screaming at him. And they brought in a Spanish interpreter and a Portuguese interpreter, and they could not figure out what language the guy was speaking. Now, there's our proof, right? I have a second verifiable witness. That's all we ask for these stories is two, right? So I was able
Which
to go
mark
with it.
It's way above what the Weekly World News does.
Weekly
so
World
I
News
think
is
you're
one.
Just being
one.
Diligent.
Yeah, one. Somebody says it, you know, Art Bell and at Ghost Coast AM. One person says it, it's true, you know, but I wanted two. Modern journalism is supposed to be three, but I don't even think modern journalism uses that rule anymore either.
So, no, the good ones do. I will say that. The good ones do.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, that's the story of the Bok Tower Gnome. We think they're still out there. They got their magic rock. They do remember them releasing the guy because they couldn't understand him. The police were just super frustrated. She just remembers the two officers being so frustrated that they just didn't want to deal with this. They were like, and I believe that she said something like, this is going to just end up at Ripley's, so let's just get rid of it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so that story kind of went viral for us after Coast to Coast AM. And when Carrie and I were doing our first book tour, I don't know how many gnomes Carrie was forced to draw. I feel so bad for her. She was forced to draw all these gnomes with oranges. But we will put her illustration of the gnome with the orange crate from the book in the show notes.
And you can purchase it. Our store should be up here.
Yes, so. We'll be able to purchase the gnome print.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, all that said, that was 1955. So we have to go forward in time, and we're going to go to probably one of the first that I recall viral YouTube things.
Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm bringing some oranges with us on this way back machine.
Yeah, but... please do. Please do. Because apparently they like oranges.
Yeah, so. I've got it. I got us covered.
Okay, so we are going to go to 2006. And we are going to go to Mobile, Alabama.
Okay.
All right. And it's actually, you know, one of those neighborhoods of Mobile called Crichton, as in Michael Crichton of Jurassic Park and
yes.
fame. But this, however, became one of the greatest internet videos of all time. And Bo will definitely be linking this video because, wow. And there is an illustration that accompanies this news article that I think is right up there with Carrie's amazing illustration.
Definitely.
This was an artist's rendering that was, quote, an amateur sketch of the creature spotted in Crichton, Alabama in 2006. This town still has a sign that is an 8-foot tall version of this, but that was not what was originally seen, right? This 8-foot tall cutout of it is amazing too. But anyway, the video is shot near Mobile. It's basically this area that's divided between Spring Hill Avenue, and that has North Crichton and South Crichton. And then Interstate 65 is like right there. And somewhere on LaCrenn Street near Bayshore Avenue, somebody saw something in a tree.
LaCrenn Street on... Okay.
All right. And they see something in a tree. And when they shone a light at it, disappeared. Like vanished. Instantly.
Okay.
And this is March 14th. This is right before St. Patty's Day. And what they were swore they saw. And they started getting numerous calls at the police station about this.
Mm-hmm.
They were seeing a leprechaun.
The leprechaun, what?
They heard about it at the barbershop. They heard about it at the church. And then the news crew shows up and things sort of snowballs.
Okay.
It's just everybody, multiple people have seen the thing in the tree. And then we've got the amazing sketch done by Nina Thomas Brown, who, thankfully is an artist beyond compare. So she was able to draw it from the witnesses. One of my favorite quotes from the video, I can't do it justice, but I will try my best. Here's the quote. Could be a crackhead that got into something and decided to dress like a leprechaun in a tree. So.
How big was this supposed to be?
About 2 or 3 foot tall.
Okay.
And one man, now this was in the video, his name is DeMarco Morissette. And he claims he has Irish ancestry. And he had a very special leprechaun flute that he claimed was thousands of years old. And he became known as the Flute Man due to this news report. And so he's going to play the flute to protect the town from the leprechaun.
I'm having problems with words.
Yes. So some people say it's a shadow from the tree branches being too close. And maybe there's a moss that explains it, but I don't believe it's a leprechaun, he says. The piece aired twice, right? They aired it during the day and then they aired it again at night. And it was the night version that went viral, right? It just exploded. And it got posted in 2006.
Okay.
On March 17th on YouTube. And as of now, I'm looking at it. It has over 30 million views.
Oh my God.
And I remember, gosh, I think Howard Stern talked about it. Daily Show talked about it. I recall South Park did a bit on it. Everybody, you know, they thought that it was this had to be just some sort of joke for St. Patty's Day news article, right? This couldn't be a real news article. No, it was really on the news. And what was it? Back in the day, Tosh? Was it Tosh 2.0 or whatever?
Yeah, 2.0.
Yeah, he did one of the web investigations of it and interviewed a bunch of the people. And he has the best quote about it. It is the Gone with the Wind of internet videos. It's old, it's famous, and it makes the South look terrible. Just one of those great quotes, right?
I love Tosh.
Now, the sketch was auctioned on eBay, and it made over $1,000 for charity.
Okay.
That's how good the art is on this sketch. So I'm hoping Carrie's art, if we ever were to auction her original piece for the gnome, it would garner, you know, half that at least.
Well, it's going to be hard to compete with, yeah.
Now, this story, I do have to say this about Tosh.0 making it famous again and bringing it back and all this. 2014, one of the Dallas TV shows comes in and starts researching it, right? We're trying to bring it back up because it's the anniversary and all that. And they start interviewing witnesses for the Crichton Leprechaun. And one person said they knew who it was.
Okay.
A few other people backed him up on it. The name was a guy named Sean, who was a dwarf. And they said they were brought to meet him. And he said, yeah, I was paid to dress in a leprechaun suit and climb in trees. But he was nowhere near the original sightings. He did it after to keep it alive.
So what do you think? You know, you told both of these stories, but what do you think? Because in Ireland, it was interesting, the first story, the ones around Bock Tower, because in Ireland and over in Europe, if you go over there, they have the little people. That's what they call them. And they're fae. And, you know, kind of where the leprechaun rumor came from. But all over Europe, they talk about, and there are people that have seen the little people of Europe, right?
Yeah.
What do you think these are little people? Maybe they...
I like to say there, you know, there's a lot of strange things out there. I know there was a 16th century alchemist named Paracelsus, and he was the one who identified gnomes as nature spirits.
Okay.
And they were earth elementals in contrast to air, fire, you know, water elementals, right? Now he was putting them in the same branch as elves and dryads and satyrs and brownies and stuff like that. So sometimes that's why I think they get a little mixed up, is his original book way back in this, you know, 16th century. But he also kind of brought them into the garden gnome mythology.
Yeah.
Right. It comes from, what was it? The Greek gnosis, which means knowledge, but it could also mean genomosis, which is earth dweller, which I think would be closer to gnome. I don't, that's the scientist in me. I think they are some sort of earth spirit. That's why we can't catch them, why we can't find them. I think catching one in a orange crate is interesting. We have met some very small people in our lives. Our wonderful friend from American Horror Story Coven, Ma Petite, we got to meet her at one of the first Phantasm conferences, and she was adorable. And she's a little over a foot.
Yeah. Tall.
So people can live like that. You know, it's not uncommon. And there are stories. We even have the Cherokee legend, the Moon-Eyed people, right up here in the Appalachians, where they were small, short people with big heads that the Cherokee chased into the mountains, because they went to war with them, and they had bad eyesight. They couldn't live during the day. They had to hide in the caves and stuff, and they attacked them during a full moon. You know, and it's one of those, this is history. This isn't a myth, according to them. This is their history.
Yeah.
Great victories. Are they real? I don't know. It's one of those. Edwina swore that this is what she saw. And that's, you know, and that was to her on her, you know, deathbed. She was still, this is what happened. And like I said, having that other independent witness verify it. Yes, I think Gnomes of Bock Tower happened. Crichton Leprechaun? I don't know. But the video is hysterical. So watch it, please.
Yes, no, I agree.
Yeah, there's all, and it's just like we talked about with vampires and dragons and all these things where every race of people on the planet, even the untouched tribes that had never met a single human outside, had a word for vampire, had a word for dragon, and 99% have a word for fey, gnome, earth spirit, right?
Yeah.
And they even have a million ways for dealing with them, right? You know, salt over the shoulder, you know, lay in the circle of iron and all that, or, you know, and don't lay down in the mushroom circles. And I would say don't lay down in the orange field, right? So that's all I can say with all this. Is it a certainty that they existed? No. But is it something that we don't understand? Yes. It is preternatural, and we are going to stick with that.
So. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the little people. That's what I have to say about that.
I do not believe in the song Short People Got No Reason to Live. So no, it is a cute song, but that was the 70s, and we've grown from that. So.
Yes. We absolutely have grown from that. Well, Mark, I enjoyed this little gnome journey on my birthday. I appreciate you taking me on it.
Yeah, and we'll definitely stop and get you an orange cake on the way back. So
okay, great.
Or if we go to Mobile, you can have the Mobile Classic, which is the 7-Up cake. Now, if you haven't had one of those.
I am a huge fan of cake. The unfortunate part for me now is I have to be gluten-free.
Oh.
And so my cake eating things are weird at this point.
Okay. We'll have to figure something out for you.
We will. We'll celebrate. I mean, I'm not inviting you because of the whole Bruce Campbell thing earlier, but Bo's definitely welcome to go with me.
That's all right. That's all right. You and Bo can go have some fun. And I will.
And I will start it off in the spring. Hey, we might go naked into a fairy circle with flowers. You never know.
Who knows what's going to happen. So, right? So,
yeah.
All right, gang. Well, with that, happy birthday, Erica. And thank you again, travelers, for joining us. As always, please like, share, subscribe, all that fun stuff. I'm terrible at this. I don't like that part, but you know, we got to do it to please, you know, help us continue the show. We appreciate all our patrons on Patreon who have joined us. And we've done a couple live things for them, and they've had fun with that. And we've got more coming. So please, if you get a chance, visit erietravels.com and link over to that. You can follow us on all the socials as well. And with that, gang, I think we are ready to continue off on our next adventure. We have cleaned up the Wayback Machine for the next round. We are now going to be heading over to Spook Hill, putting the car in neutral, watching it roll backwards up the hill, and then we'll drive over to that orange grove and we'll look for a sacred rock. We'll just watch out for the bees, and we'll see you on the other side.